This is From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archive's weekly program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. Hi, I'm Christopher Sprinkle, producer of From the Vault. Lieutenant Harry Colborne of the 2nd Canadian Infantry Brigade, on his way from his home in Winnipeg to Europe to join the fighting in the Great War, paid $20 Canadian in White River, Ontario, for a small female black bear cub from a hunter who had killed its mother. Soon, as Lieutenant Colborne's brigade continued on their journey, the cub became the mascot of the unit. In Britain, the bear cub lived with the brigade until they were posted to the battlefields of France. Before leaving, Lieutenant Colborne loaned the bear to the London Zoo and formally presented her to the zoo in December of 1919 after Colborne made it back from the fighting. The bear was extremely popular, much loved for her playfulness. She was known as a very gentle bear and never attacked anyone. One of her biggest fans was a young boy named Christopher. Christopher liked the bear so much, he changed the name of his own golden teddy bear to the name of this black bear. The bear's name was Winnipeg, named by Lieutenant Colborne for his home in Canada. The troops, however, and subsequently the London Zoo and everyone else, including young Christopher, called the bear Winnie for short. Christopher's father, the writer Alan Milne, inspired by watching Christopher play with Winnie and his other stuffed animals. He had a donkey, a small pig, a tiger, and a kangaroo with a baby in its pouch. Began writing a series of books based on their adventures. In October 1926, Winnie the Pooh was published. 8 years later, in 1934, after the verses Now We Are Six and The House at Pooh Corner were also published, Winnipeg the Black Bear, star attraction at London Zoo, and with her place in history now secured, died of natural causes.
What do you like doing best in the whole world, Pooh? Well, said Pooh, what I like best. And then he had to stop and think, because although eating honey was a very good thing to do, there was a moment just before you began to eat it, which was even better than when you were. But he didn't know what it was called. And then he thought that being with Christopher Robin was a very good thing to do, and that having Piglet near was a very friendly thing to have. And so when he had thought it all out, he said, what I like best in the whole world is me and Piglet going to see you, and you're saying, what about a little something? And me saying, well, I shouldn't mind a little something, should you, Piglet? And it being sort of a hummy day outside, and the birds singing. I like that too, said Christopher Robin, but what I like best is doing nothing. How do you do nothing? Asked Pooh, after he'd wondered for a long time. Well, it's when people call out at you just as you're going off to do it. What are you going to do, Christopher Robin? And you say, oh, nothing. And then you go and do it.
The story of Winnie the Pooh is known, quite possibly, to everyone. The film versions of the story have been translated into nearly every language, and the original books have sold. Conservative estimates put sales over 70 million copies, including books in more than 25 languages. In fact, the story is so successful that it can be argued A.A. Milne's creation has kept the Walt Disney Company afloat during its harder times. Since Walt Disney acquired the film rights to the story in 1961 because his own daughters liked Pooh so much, Pooh feature films, videos, teddy bears, and other merchandise have made incredible sums of money for Disney. It is estimated that Winnie the Pooh generates as much revenue as Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy, and Pluto combined. But the story is, of course, more than just a money-making machine. It is a timeless tale of childhood and our limitless imaginations. It is about friendship, loyalty, and doing Christopher Robin's favorite thing in the world. Nothing at all.
So he began to climb the tree. He climbed, and he climbed, and he climbed. And as he climbed, he sang a little song to himself.
That was taken from an original musical production of Winnie the Pooh, produced in 1971 by the Athenian School Drama Workshop of Danville, California. Winnie the Pooh has been adapted into musicals, films, television shows, new books, audiobooks, music has been written about the story, and even two books of supposed literary criticism were written by Frederick Cruz, The Pooh Perplex and Postmodern Pooh. The two collections of essays are parodies of different schools of criticism. There's Freudian, Marxist, Christian symbolism, post-structuralist, etc., etc. Cast in the form of a student casebook on Winnie the Pooh. The volumes, with bibliographic notes at the beginning and study questions at the end of each essay, are a parody of student study guides in general, and actually are hilarious in their accuracy. Here is Frederick Cruz reading from The Pooh Perplex in 1964. Keep in mind the entire reading is fictional, including Cruz's very elaborate introduction.
I'm going to read a speech which was delivered at the annual conference of the Modern Language Association just last year in Washington. And this address was given to a highly selected group by Professor Smedley Force, a very admirable conservative scholar who comes out very strongly against irresponsibility and criticism. He never tires, really, with his remarkable persistence in upholding the standard of responsible criticism. And I think you will see some of this powerful and valuable conservatism in his address. It was called Prolegomena to Any Future Study of Winnie the Pooh.
Now we skip forth to the meat of the speech.
But the slickness, irrelevance, and devil-may-care irresponsibility of modern criticism are nowhere more in evidence than in the case of Winnie the Pooh. What I aim to accomplish this afternoon, for, gentlemen, I assure you that I am not going to monopolize your precious time merely to be negative and cantankerous, is to set forth my idea of what needs to be done on this book, and to ask you, in your capacity as editors and dissertation advisors, to see to it that no further Oedipus complexes and mythopoeias are allowed to slip into print until the foundations for mature criticism have been sunk irrefrangibly into the text of Winnie the Pooh. Here, then, are some topics that will bear fruitful investigation, either by your distinguished selves or by your carefully supervised protégés. First, we must all be struck by the paucity of biographical connections between Winnie the Pooh and the lives of A.A. Milne, Christopher Robin, and the historical personages who probably lie behind the fictional portraits of Pooh, Piglet, Kanga, et alia. A study in this vein might properly begin at the dedication of the entire volume, quote, to her, unquote. True, this seems to refer to a member of Milne's family, perhaps even of his immediate family. But what a windfall it would be for some worthy scholar to reveal that it was really another woman in the author's life. Careers, gentlemen, entire careers, have been built upon slighter discoveries than this. Less spectacular, no doubt, But equally of value to future criticism would be a thorough inquiry into the carryover from the real Christopher Robin, who I assume to be a near acquaintance of the author's, to the Christopher Robin of Storyland. How can we possibly attach any significance to the fictional Christopher's actions until we have first assured ourselves that they are fictional? If, for example, the child really had a teddy bear named Pooh, the publication of this single fact could put an end to speculations about the so-called relationship between the two characters in the book. Pooh and Christopher Robin would simply be Pooh and Christopher Robin, and that would be that. You will find some remarks in Milne's autobiography telling which characters he invented and which ones he took from stuffed animals, but I need not remind you that such statements in themselves do not constitute effective literary evidence. Perhaps Milne was telling less than the whole truth, and if he wasn't, what does it mean to put a stuffed animal into literature? I believe it is self-evident that one would add to the characters of such prototypes with details from the lives of one's friends and enemies. Who, then, were really the officious rabbit, the melancholy Eeyore, and the admirable hero of the book, Owl? The answers to these questions might stun the critics into silence for years. Another promising project is that of enumerating and glossing the strictly local elements in Winnie the Pooh. It is obvious that when Milne refers to, and I quote, a small spinney of larch trees, he's not indulging in that irresponsible universality that your new critic finds everywhere, but is being specific and definite. What is a larch tree, and exactly which spinney of them did Milne have in mind? Where is the 100-acre wood? Has it been bulldozed for lower-class slum projects and such poppycock? Or is it still in proper condition for a literary pilgrimage?
That, again, was Frederick Crewe's reading from his book The Pooh Perplex in 1964, in the character of Professor Smedleyforce. As bizarre as that speech is, it is quite possible Winnie the Pooh's creator, A.A. Milne, would have very much appreciated Crewe's collection of critical essays. Before the success of the Pooh books, Alan Milne was a popular dramatist, novelist, and humorist, and many of his plays were performed to great critical acclaim in both Europe and North America. Milne often resented that he had, in his own words, quote, said goodbye to all that in 70,000 words. Those 70,000 words were, of course, the approximate number of words in the Pooh books. And it was true, Milne would forever be remembered for what the public considered children's stories, although there is much evidence Milne never planned the books to be for children, rather for the child within us all. In fact, Milne rarely read the stories to his son, Christopher, the basis for Christopher Robin, preferring to read to him P.G. Wodehouse stories. Christopher Milne wrote in a letter later in life, "My father did not write the books for children. He didn't write for any specific market. He knew nothing about marketing. He knew about me. He knew about himself. He knew about the Garrick Club. He was ignorant about anything else, except, perhaps, about life." So perhaps Milne would appreciate the effort Frederick Crewe put into his two books of literary criticism on Winnie the Pooh. Perhaps he would see the humor. You're listening to From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archive's weekly program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. This week, we're getting all literate and serious with one of the most popular books of all time, A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh. Here again is Frederick Crewe, this time reading his essay, O Felix Culpa, The Sacramental Meaning of Winnie the Pooh, by C.J.L. Culpepper.
The minuscule handful of persons already acquainted with my studies in English literature will recognize by my present title that a new and perhaps not insignificant effort is being made here, namely to find within a children's story the components of genuine art. By art, I of course understand the dulcis et utile canon familiar to classical, medieval, and Renaissance writers alike, with a good deal greater emphasis on the utile, to be sure. When Homer saw to it that the impious Hector was dragged around the walls of Troy 3 times, he was teaching a lesson about the triple pitfalls of pride. When Tamburlaine was permitted to sack cities and sink himself in every luxurious vice, the saintly Marlowe was, as Roy Battenhouse has shown us, pointing a moral about the impermanence of the flesh. In every case of authentic literature, and the reader will be able to supply innumerable examples from his own experience, the literary value results from a kernel of serious moral doctrine that is surrounded by a superficial appeal to the eye and ear. The business of criticism, as I comprehend it, is to peel away this outer husk, discard it where it will do no further harm, and expose the core of sententia for all to understand. The responsibility I am currently imposing upon my modest analytic powers is that of finding this central meaning in Winnie the Pooh.
That, again, was Frederick Crewe's reading from his book The Pooh Perplex in 1964. And now, let's hear traditional readings from the Pooh series. We'll hear sections from the Winnie the Pooh books, including The Search for Small, When Pooh Falls on Piglet, and The Party for Eeyore. These are part of the program Doing Nothing, produced by Elliot Gould in 1970 for Los Angeles's KPFK.
Pooh was sitting in his house one day, counting his pots of honey, when there came a knock on the door. 14, said Pooh. Come in. 14. Or was it 15? Bother, that's muddled me. Hello, Pooh, said Rabbit. Hello, Rabbit. 14, wasn't it? What was? My pots of honey that I was counting. 14, that's right. Are you sure? No, said Rabbit. Does it matter? I just like to know, said Pooh humbly, so as I can say to myself, I've got 14 pots of honey left. Or 15, as the case may be. It's sort of comforting. Well, let's call it 16, said Rabbit. What I came to say was, have you seen Small anywhere about? I don't think so, said Pooh. And then after thinking a little more, he said, who is Small? One of my friends and relations, said Rabbit carelessly. This didn't help Pooh much, because Rabbit had so many friends and relations, and of such different sorts and sizes, that he didn't know whether he ought to be looking for Small at the top of an oak tree or in the petal of a buttercup. I haven't seen anybody today, said Pooh. Not so as to say, hello, Small, to. Did you want him for anything? I don't want him, said Rabbit, but it's always useful to know where a friend and relation is, whether you want him or not. Oh, I see, said Pooh. Is he lost? Well, said Rabbit, nobody has seen him for a long time, so I suppose he is. Anyway, he went on importantly, I promised Christopher Robin I'd organize a search for him, so come on. Pooh said goodbye affectionately to his 14 pots of honey, and hoped they were 15, and he and Rabbit went out into the forest. Now, said Rabbit, this is a search, and I've organized it. Done what to it, said Pooh? Organized it, which means, well, it's what you do to a search when you don't all want to look in the same place at once. So I want you, Pooh, to search by the 6 pine trees first, and then you work your way towards Owl's house, and look out for me there. Do you see? No, said Pooh. What? Then I'll see you at Owl's house in about an hour's time. Is Piglet organized, too? We all are, said Rabbit, and off he went. As soon as Rabbit was out of sight, Pooh remembered that he had forgotten to ask who Small was, and whether he was the sort of friend and relation who settled on one's nose, or the sort who got trodden on by mistake. And as it was too late now, he thought he would begin the hunt by looking for Piglet, and asking him who they were looking for, before he looked for it. And it's no good looking at the 6 pine trees for Piglet, said Pooh to himself, because he's been organized into a special place of his own. So I shall have to look for the special place first. I wonder where it is. And he wrote it down in his head, like this. Order of looking for things. 1. Special place, to find Piglet. 2. Piglet, to find who Small is. 3. Small, to find Small. 4. Rabbit, to tell him I've found Small. 5. Small again, to tell him I've found Rabbit. Which makes it look like a bothering sort of day, thought Pooh, as he stumped along. The next moment the day became very bothering indeed, because Pooh, who was busy not looking where he was going, stepped on a piece of forest which had been left out by mistake, and he had only time to think to himself, I'm flying, what Owl does. I wonder how you stop. When he stopped, bump. Ow, squeaked something. That's funny, thought Pooh. I've said ow without really owing. Help, said a small high voice. That's me again, thought Pooh. I've had an accident, and I've fallen down a well, and my voice has gone all squeaky and works before I'm ready for it, because I've done something to myself inside. Bother! Help, help! There you are! I say things when I'm not trying, so it must be a very bad accident. And then he thought that perhaps when he did try to say things, he wouldn't be able to. So to make sure, he said loudly, "A very bad accident to Pooh Bear." "Pooh!" squeaked the voice. "It's Piglet," cried Pooh eagerly. "Where are you?" "Underneath," said Piglet, in an underneath sort of way. "Underneath what?" "You," squeaked Piglet. "Get up!" "Oh," said Pooh, and scrambled up as quickly as he could. "Did I fall on you, Piglet?" "You fell on me," said Piglet, feeling himself all over. "I didn't mean to," said Pooh sorrowfully. "I didn't mean to be underneath," said Piglet sadly. "But I'm all right now, Pooh, and I'm so glad it was you." "What happened?" said Pooh. "Where are we?" "I think we're in a sort of a pit. I was walking along, looking for somebody, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. And just as I got up to see where I was, something fell on me, and it was you." "So it was," said Pooh. "Yes," said Piglet. "Pooh," he went on, nervously, and came a little closer, "do you think we're in a trap?" Pooh hadn't thought about it at all, but now he nodded, for suddenly he remembered how he and Piglet had once made a Pooh trap for Heffalumps, and he guessed what had happened. He and Piglet had fallen into a Heffalump trap for Poohs. That's what it was. "What happens when the Heffalump comes?" asked Piglet tremblingly when he had heard the news. "Perhaps he won't notice you, Piglet," said Pooh encouragingly, "because you're a very small animal." "But he'll notice you, Pooh." "He'll notice me, and I shall notice him," said Pooh, thinking it out. "We shall notice each other for a long time, and then he'll say, 'Hoo-hoo!'" Piglet shivered a little at the thought of that hoo-hoo, and his ears began to twitch. "What will you say?" he asked. Pooh tried to think of something he would say, but the more he thought, the more he felt that there is no real answer to hoo-hoo, said by a Heffalump, in the sort of voice this Heffalump was going to say it in. "I shan't say anything," said Pooh at last. "I shall just hum to myself, as if I were waiting for something." "Then perhaps he'll say hoo-hoo again," suggested Piglet anxiously. "He will," said Pooh. Piglet's ears twitched so quickly that he had to lean them against the side of the trap to keep them quiet. "He will say it again," said Pooh, "and I shall go on humming, and that will upset him, because when you say hoo-hoo twice, in a gloating sort of way, and the other person only hums, you suddenly find, just as you begin to say it the third time, that, well, you find..."
"What?"
"That it isn't," said Pooh.
"Isn't what?"
Pooh knew what he meant, but being a bear of very little brain, he couldn't think of the words. "Well, it just isn't," he said again.
"You mean it isn't hoo-hooish anymore," suggested Piglet hopefully.
Pooh looked at him admiringly and said that that was what he had meant, if you went on humming all the time, because you couldn't go on saying hoo-hoo forever.
"But he'll say something else," said Piglet.
"That's just it. He'll say, 'What's all this?' And then I shall say, 'And this is a very good idea, Piglet, which I've just thought of. I shall say, it's a trap for a Heffalump which I've made, and I'm waiting for the Heffalump to fall in.' And I shall go on humming, and that will unsettle him."
"Pooh!" cried Piglet, and now it was his turn to be the admiring one. "You've saved us!"
"Have I?" said Pooh, not feeling quite sure. But Piglet was quite sure, and his mind ran on, and he saw Pooh and the Heffalump talking to each other, and he thought suddenly, and a little sadly, that it would have been rather nice if it had been Piglet and the Heffalump talking so grandly to each other, and not Pooh, much as he loved Pooh, because he really had more brain than Pooh, and the conversation would go so much better if he and not Pooh were doing one side of it. And it would be comforting afterwards in the evenings to look back on the day when he had answered a Heffalump back as bravely as if the Heffalump wasn't there. While Piglet was dreaming this happy dream, and Pooh was wondering again whether it was 14 or 15, the search for Small was still going on all over the forest. Small's real name was Very Small Beetle, but he was called Small for short, when he was spoken to at all, which hardly ever happened except when somebody said, "Really Small." He had been staying with Christopher Robin for a few seconds, and had started round a gorse bush for exercise, but instead of coming back the other way as expected, he hadn't, so nobody knew where he was.
"Ha!" said Rabbit again, and he looked very important. "This is serious. He is lost. We must begin the search at once."
was the first party to which Roo had ever been, and he was very excited. As soon as they had sat down, he began to talk. "Hello, Pooh," he squeaked. "Hello, Roo," said Pooh. Roo jumped up and down in his seat for a little while and began again. "Hello, Piglet," he squeaked. Piglet waved a paw at him, being too busy to say anything. "Hello, Eeyore," said Roo. Eeyore nodded gloomily at him. "It will rain soon. You see if it doesn't," he said. Roo looked out to see if it didn't, and it didn't, so he said, "Hello, Owl," and Owl said, "Hello, my little fellow," in a kindly way, and went on telling Christopher Robin about an accident which had nearly happened to a friend of his, whom Christopher Robin didn't know. And Kanga said to Roo, "Drink up your milk, dear, first, and talk afterwards." So Roo, who was drinking his milk, tried to say that he could do both at once, and had to be patted on the back and dried for quite a long time afterwards. When they had all nearly eaten enough, Christopher Robin banged on the table with his spoon, and everybody stopped talking and was very silent, except Roo, who was just finishing a loud attack of hiccups, and trying not to look as if he was one of Rabbit's friends and relations. "This party," said Christopher Robin, "is a party because of what someone did. And we all know who it was, and it's his party, because of what he did. And I've got a present for him, and here it is." And then he felt about a little and whispered, "Where is it?" While he was looking, Eeyore coughed in an impressive way and began to speak. "Friends," he said, "including oddments, it is a great pleasure, or perhaps I had better say, it has been a pleasure so far to see you at my party. What I did was nothing."
Those were readings from Winnie the Pooh from the program Doing Nothing, produced by Elliot Gould in 1970 for Pacifica Station KPFK. And this is the end of another week of From the Vault. From the Vault is produced, written, and edited by Christopher Sprinkle and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. To purchase a copy of this program or any of the archive materials used within this week's program, go online at fromthevaultradio.org or call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. From the Vault is presented as part of the Preservation and Access Project, which is funded in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, University of California at Berkeley's Moffitt Library, the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica listeners. From the Vault's theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. I am Christopher Sprinkle, and thank you for listening. Across the cell, grab your pants, a better stance, or will we jump up?